Welcome back again to the Chasing Tone podcast. I, of course, am Brian Wampler, and back again today is Blake Weiland from the Tone Mob podcast. Today we talk about DIY guitar pedals, talk about where to start if you're wanting to get into building pedals and wanting to get into the DIY stuff, and we also talk about amps in a box, like, you know, the Plexi Tones in a box and Vox style pedals in a box, and, you know, how that sound is derived and whether it should be used direct in with an amp and a lot of other things kind of around that area. And of course, again, we do go a little bit off topic, but that's just how we do it. So let's roll right into it.
Peaches come from a can, they were put there by a man.
Yeah, that song jams.
In a factory downtown.
And if I had my little way, I'd eat peaches every day.
I think we got what it takes, Brian.
Sun sucking bulges in the shade.
I mean, he probably wouldn't have done like boll weevil either.
Little boll, I forget how that song goes.
I can't remember. Driving a dune buggy around. Oh man, it's awesome.
That's little dune buggy in the sand.
Yep.
Little blue dune buggy
in the sand.
Well, hello, Mr. Blake.
Hi, that's as good a way to start off the podcast as any.
That's the best podcast intro ever.
Ever.
From now on, we're just going to sing the entire podcast.
I don't mind that. I could sing the entire podcast. What do you want to sing?
Then we'll be down to two listeners. It'll be like my mom and your wife.
And my mom.
And your mom. So that's three. So
yeah.
We're good there.
Yeah, so we'll be okay.
Yeah, we'll be all right. We'll make it work.
I love it.
Well, okay, Brian. So. I interrupted you.
No, that's okay. No. I was just going to say the same thing you were probably about to say, which is We were going to talk about some stuff.
Wait, what? What'd you say?
I said we were going to talk about stuff.
Hold on, what? Do
Who?
I?
Where?
I'm totally messing.
I don't know where you are.
Okay, so I have questions from users/possible fans.
Or at least listeners. Probably not fans, because how could you be a fan of this?
Probably not fans, but people that are, you know, have to endure this. Mm-hmm. How about that?
Right.
Okay, so, and it's kind of DIY guitar pedal based. You know, a little bit of stuff like that. So I actually have a couple things. So, but I think it'll be interesting for all the people that, you know, listen to this podcast.
Okay.
So, and I know that if I happen to say something like, dude, I have no idea, it's okay because I don't either.
It's probably, I have a feeling this is probably going to be very much me going, dude, I have no idea. But that's okay. I go through life every day saying, dude, I have no idea. And it's gotten me this far. So I'm okay with it.
Okay. So I have a couple of them. So a few of these may be pretty quick.
Okay.
But then, you know us, they may probably go off somewhere totally different.
As is talking about accepted.
Pizza.
I love pizza.
Okay. So I'm going to jump into the first one by his name's Jared. I think it's Eigenram. It's Eigenram. So I barely graduated high school. I can't pronounce it.
I'll go with that.
Jared. Mm-hmm. Let's call him Jared.
Hi, Jared. Hey, what's up, Jay?
Mac Daddy Jay on a horn. Okay.
Yep.
He says, I'm interested in DIY guitar pedals. The problem is I don't know where to start. So how would you recommend getting into building guitar pedals? I'd like to make a Tube Screamer style overdrive and a fuzz. Also, how much does it cost to DIY something compared to just buying pedals? So there's a lot of different stuff in there.
Yeah, I actually can have some input on this. Wow.
I figured you'd have some input on this because it's kind of up your alley.
Right.
You want to go first? You want me to go first?
Yeah, I'll go first because you'll have a lot more of the deets, and I have a general overview. Obviously,
speak to Grandmaster Jay.
Grandmaster Jay, first of all, you need to forget this guitar pedal thing and get into hip hop. And second of all, as far as cost goes, I mean, I think you and I both know, dollar wise, there's no comparison. Building your own is way cheaper dollar wise. However, it takes a lot of time. So if you don't, you know, if you don't put a dollar factor on your time, it's just kind of something you do for enjoyment, then there's no comparison in as far as just building a kit, you know, versus buying a pedal. Obviously, it's a third of the cost. A lot of what you're paying for with pedals is the R&D and the labor. So if you want to compare the costs, yeah, it's way cheaper to buy yourself a build your own clone kit or a kit from Mammoth or a kit from wherever. There's, I don't even know where all the kit places you can buy from these days. Does General Guitar Gadgets,
a ton
do
of
they,
them.
Yeah, they sell some. Yeah. I mean, there's just a ton.
Yeah, I think General Guitar Gadgets still does. Mad Bean sells kits. I know there's another couple, but is Mammoth? Did you say Mammoth?
Yeah, I said Mammoth definitely has kits. Okay.
Small Bear. I think Small Bear has some kits.
And I would just go like...
Build Your Own Clone, of course.
Of course. Build Your Own Clone is really good for the beginner, I think, if I understand it correctly. They have some of the most hands-on, or not hands-on, but like kind of hold your hand in building this pedal type of instructions, if I remember correctly.
Right. Yeah, and they have a big user forum, too. I think Mad Bean does, too. Yeah. So, you know, if you, for example, you put it together and like, it doesn't work. What do I do? Well, there's a forum for that. So you hop on the forum and you're like, hey, I built the new Tube Screamer Deluxe, you know, whatever, and I'm not getting anything. And then there'll be helpful people on there be like, hey, did you check out this and this and this and maybe try this and that and this and that?
Yeah.
And that's usually the technical terms that they speak into.
Yeah. Another thing to say is I would also, you know, some of these kits actually have demo videos like and things like that out there. So
yeah,
if you're not sure which one you want, finding one that somebody's already cut a demo of would help you kind of make that decision, because those are actually available and a lot of people don't realize that.
Yeah, should be tons of YouTube videos for the, especially the build your own clone stuff. Mm-hmm. Should be tons of stuff. And I saw some Mad Bean kit or some Mad Bean videos as well. And that's the, so like if that's the beginning entry, I would think like if you just want something that's going to work and like you don't really, I think there's a couple different camps. I think there's the guys that just want, they just want something to work on and want it to be fun. And they don't necessarily want to know the ins and outs and the whys and the what ifs, but they just, you know, it's just a project and it's a fun little project. And so they do it, you know, then I think you have the guys that were probably more like me whenever I was starting out, which is, yeah, but what does that capacitor do? And why does that change bass? You know?
Right.
And I think from that perspective, I would recommend getting a breadboard. You can get those from Small Bear as well. Probably Mammoth. I haven't checked their website, but I know Small Bear carries them. And so what that allows you to do is just basically you can quote unquote build a circuit on this breadboard, but the parts just kind of poke in the little holes, and you connect little wires and resistors to the power and the ground, and you don't have to solder anything. So you can do it really quick. You can take this capacitor out, put a larger one in, and see what it does.
Mm-hmm.
That's like my favorite way of learning analog electronics.
Right.
At least as far as guitar audio, you know?
Right. Breadboarding.
Breadboarding. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if you've seen my Instagram, that's the thing that has like wires going everywhere and it looks really messy and chaotic. That's a breadboard.
Mm-hmm.
And oddly enough, that's kind of what my brain looks like inside as well. So
mine looks like breadboard, you know, with no wires.
Well, I got wires. They just go, they don't go anywhere. They just go to nothing. They go to ground.
You need to get in the forums and figure out what's wrong with it.
I definitely do. So I'm sure someone would say there's no hope, but at least that's what my wife says.
We don't make a capacitor to fix this. Understandably.
New old stock will not help you. I'm sorry.
No. It doesn't matter what vintage these transistors are. You are broken. Time to start right. over.
But anyway. I think a lot of people, at least from what I've heard, I mean, they feel that, well, I can build a tube skimmer for, what's a kit, $60 or something, right?
Yeah, neighborhood, yeah.
So then you got to buy a soldering iron. You got to buy some solder. I recommend buying some desoldering braid or a desoldering tool. It's like a little vacuum pump type of thing.
A little solder sucker.
Yeah. So, you know, if it's your first pedal and you're only doing one pedal, you're probably in it for $110 or so far, maybe $100. But you know, if you do more, then obviously that price gets cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's something to be said about time, you know? So if time is one of those things that's extremely valuable to you, you're like, you know, I work all week long. I really don't want to have to build this pedal, but I guess I will. I think for some people, it's just easier to buy something that's already built and they don't have any interest in the DIY stuff at all. And that's, of course, not at all what we're talking about. But I think some of those guys still... Maybe they don't anymore, but I remember a few years ago, there was a group of kind of a segmented group of DIYers who didn't really want to DIY. They just were wanting to save money.
Right.
And I think sometimes, at least from the emails that I was getting back then, it ended up being more problems than it was worth. You know, mm-hmm. where it just wasn't working, and they're like, I've been messing with this thing for 2 straight days now, and I've got, you know, that's like... it's a waste of my time.
Yeah. Like
and what they would say was like, how about I just ship it to you and you fix it? You know?
Right.
And so by that time they're $200 in a pedal.
Exactly. And then time. They spent, yeah, even if they make, you know, $10 an hour or whatever, that's still, right. You spent 8 hours doing it one day and 8 hours doing it the next day. Well, you're already, you've already bought a pedal basically.
Right.
So.
Right. So, I mean, so I'd say if you're really interested in it, make sure you're interested in really learning about it, you know, because chances are, unless it's just like a stupid, simple circuit, there's going to be, so it's probably not going to work the first time. That's common. It really is.
Mm-hmm.
Usually it's a bad solder joint or you put a part in backwards, like a transistor or an op amp or something like that, that it just won't work the other way. Of course, resistors and most capacitors will work turned around, so that's not a big deal. But there's some general things to keep in mind if you're going that route. And same sort of thing with fuzz. Fuzz, I actually think fuzz can be a little more intimidating than like a tube skimmer circuit, just because you have bias. You know, you have to bias transistors. A lot of times.
I kind of know what that means, but I think a lot of people, especially anybody listening to this, you know, that's never done anything before. Can you explain what that means?
Sure.
I think people know what adjusting the bias on a tube kind of entails, or at least a lot of people do. What about on a transistor?
The same basic premise. Basically, your third grade level here. You're making sure a certain amount of voltage gets to the part in order for it to work right.
Mm-hmm.
So JFETs are actually way more finicky than – well, I can't say way more. Some JFETs are way more finicky than some transistors, especially the types that we use for guitar stuff, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So like if you're using a J – and I'm going to get really nerdy here, so my apologies to all the people that are driving and they're like falling asleep right now. So if you're using like a J201, very, very common JFET transistor JFET transistor. So – There is one resistor on there that's going to change. A lot of people will put a trim pot in there, and they'll adjust it with this little trim pot. Trim pot being like a variable resistor, so you can go all the way from, if it's a 10K trim pot, you'll go from zero, which is like a jumper wire, into up to 10K. And so you're going to tweak that until your JFET reads basically half voltage. So if you're running at 9 volts, you want to get about 4.5 volts. So you're just dialing that in using a multimeter to measure the voltage there, mm-hmm. until you get to 4.5 to 5-ish, somewhere in that neighborhood is fine. Some transistors I've had to do that with, but it seems like most of them pretty much work, at least if we're talking silicon, pretty much work with with the desired schematic, I guess, for the most part. There's caveats. If it's a fuzz face, those are super, super finicky to get right. Now, you do have a lot of biasing going on there, a couple different points that you're going to have to bias just right. And that can be pretty intimidating for someone who's just not familiar with doing that at all. So I wouldn't recommend, I really wouldn't recommend doing a fuzz circuit right off the bat. I would probably recommend doing an op amp circuit, just, you know, simple overdrive, like a DoD 250. It's a super easy thing to do. Tube skimmer is pretty easy too, but it's got more parts than like a, or a simple IC booster or buffer. That's a really easy build as well.
Yeah, like an LPB1 or something.
I think LPB1 is actually transistor based.
Is it? Oh, well, I'll stop talking now. I just heard they're really simple, and that's the only reason I threw that out there. But
they
apparently
are simple. They are simple. I like op amps because, at least for the DIYers when you're first getting into it, because if you follow the schematic, it's pretty much going to work unless you have a wire in the wrong place or you have a bad solder joint or you put the op amp in backwards.
So here's another question. You mentioned when you were talking about biasing and fuzz face that silicon tend to be more forgiving. We all kind of know, or most people know, that germanium-based fuzzes can change with temperature and things like that. Are there ways, now this is getting extra nerdy and probably beyond what we were originally talking about, are there ways to help guard against some of that drift with a germanium transistor, or is that part's just going to do what it's going to do?
There is, yes, but it's way beyond the scope of what most DIYers are going to do.
Gotcha.
So it's not going to be on the schematic.
Interesting.
We're talking NASA level stuff.
Whoa.
You know.
Interesting.
Honestly, like, they're so finicky, and there's like you get one germanium transistor, and it may sound completely different than the second one. Mm-hmm. And so there's a bunch of reasons. Like I just don't like using them. I just don't like using them. Now if I buy one that's germanium and someone's went through the trouble of sorting transistors and all that stuff, that's fine. But as far as, you know, there's just no way in the world I can crank out 10,000 of those, you know, and jumping through all the hoops that it takes to make each one sound consistent. Right. So I personally, as a company, I tend to stay away from germanium. Love the sound, but I also think there's other ways of getting that sound without using a germanium transistor. But that's just me.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Very interesting. Yeah, because I've played some germanium fuzzes that I just fell in love with, and they're exactly what they're supposed to be, you know, kind of from a description standpoint. And I played some of them like, this is trash. and I wondered if that was a builder problem or if it was a part problem. I wasn't sure.
It could be both. It could be, I mean, I don't know what Bill is talking about, but it could be just a crappy circuit design, or it could just be that the transistors aren't matched, or that they're not biased correctly, or, you know, if you're using germanium, they could be too cold or too hot. You know, he could be looking at them wrong, and, you know, yeah, they're finicky.
Gotcha.
So.
All right.
So that's my take on DIY stuff, Grandmaster Jay.
We went a little bit different direction as we knew that we would, but I guess hopefully that.
Did we
not cover everything? I forgot. I already forgot the question.
Well, okay. So we asked how we would recommend getting into building them. So we answered that.
Mm-hmm.
Then he said, "How much does it cost to DIY compared to just buying pedals?"
Yep. Okay. Well, you touched on that. Yeah. So,
right. Yeah, so, you know, if you're a company that's building pedals, like, and I'm sure I don't know if we've covered this or not, but I'm sure it's on the internet a million different places, where, yes, there's a handful of parts in there, and it's a $200 pedal. You know, and I'm talking like, let's say it's a fuzz face or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But it's because there's a lot more that goes on to having a pedal company and building pedals for profit rather than doing it as a hobby, you know, like. Somebody's got to pay the employees. Somebody's got to pay for the place to build. Somebody's got to pay for the insurance, the overhead, so to speak. You got to have a layer of profit in there. You got to have a layer of profit in there for distributors. You got to have a layer of profit in there for retailers. It's a business, you know, and so you have to look at it like a business. So if you're, you know, if you're selling pedals for $70 on eBay, ain't going to last long.
I mean, you know, guess you can maintain that at some level, but if that's all you want to do, but if you're trying to,
well, yeah,
you know, we always get into this. We've talked about this ad nauseum.
Right. You know, what we should do? We should talk about the business of it, the business
side. Let's talk about that again. Yeah. Cause
we haven't done that yet.
We've never ever had business topics discussed on this podcast ever.
And nor will we ever.
No, because neither you or I are interested in that.
No.
So.
All right. So I have next question is from Steve Yearsley.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of a rapper name for Steve, and I'm coming up short.
Stevie so, Y.
Stevie Y. Mm-hmm. All right, Stevie Y. Stevie Y says, "Hey, guys, on the Chasing Tone podcast, that's us.
Uh-huh.
Could you talk specifically about what you or any pedal builder are shooting for with pedals that try to reproduce a particular rig? Say, for example, like an AC30 or a Plexi in a box. So, you know, we make one of each of those. I can understand using those pedals in a DI situation, mm-hmm. direct in, is what he means, almost like a plug-in software. What I don't get is taking one of these pedals, putting it through an amp that adds its own color. How do you account for that? Also, how do you even approach the design of stuffing a complicated AC30 circuit, tubes, output transformer, baffle, all that stuff that goes into the sound of an AC30, into a solid-state box? Please edumacate me because I feel stupid." And that's how he actually typed it.
I am going to sit back and cross my legs and say, scratch my chin and say, "Brian Wampler, you tell me, because I have no idea. Never done it."
There's so many ways I could go bordering on the edge of sarcasm to being just truthful. So I'll take the truthful route. So with the AC30, you know, and of course we have a pedal that does that sound as well.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Right. And so what I did with that, I actually had a bunch of different prototypes that I went through trying to get. I was going for the clean chime. That's the mm-hmm. thing I was going for. So I wanted to be able to use, you know, whether it be a Bassman or a Deluxe Reverb or a PV Classic 50 or, you know, a PV Bandit or whatever. You know, I wanted to be able to click on this pedal and get that nice, beautiful Alnico-type chime that everyone loves whenever they are playing clean through an AC30 type amp or AC15 Vox style, or what a lot of people call Class A. It's really not Class A, but that's a different topic for a different time. but that sort of sound, you know what
right.
I mean? So in doing that, I was trying to mimic what the whole thing sounded like. So that's really hard to do because all those amps are really different, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what I ended up having to do was I put a bunch of switches on it,
right.
You know, so there's lots of EQ options. There's a 15 and a 30 selector, which, I mean, that there's some marketing speak that goes in this as well. Right. So like you can't put five switches on it and call them all different types of high end. You know, that's just something like you like one. Okay, well, this one's what do we put on triple rec? Brutal versus rock or something. I don't know, but it's basically just a high cut switch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just sounds sexier whenever mm-hmm. you label it that way. But I'm trying to when I'm prototyping all this stuff and when I'm breadboarding all this stuff, I'm running it through all these different amps and making sure that I can at least tweak the controls to get pretty damn near the same thing. You know what I mean?
Okay.
So I can still get that chime. So yes, if you're playing through, I don't know, let me think. If you're playing through a really dark amp, 412 cabinet with really dark speakers, and you're using really dark humbuckers through your really dark guitar, okay? So in other words, you just got a lot of dullness going on. It sounds like you got a mattress sitting in front of your amp, right?
Mm-hmm.
That can be pretty hard to do. And so for that, you're really going to have to start cranking up the treble, cranking up the, cranking down technically, the top cut. So it's just as chimey as you can get it.
Right.
And, I mean, you can't get everything. Like, it's not going to work on everything. It's just, if we're being honest here, it's just simply not. But that's why there's return periods, and that's why, like, you know, for some people, you're just like, all right, I'm sorry, it's just not a good fit for everything else you got going on, you know? So let's swap you out for something else, or right. I'll give you your money back. Yeah. But for the biggest majority of people, I think there's enough controls on, at least our stuff, I try to put all kinds of controls on there. There's enough controls on it where you can get what you want out of it. So right. like our Plexi Drive, for example, there's two bass controls. There's two treble controls, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, because there's a three-band EQ, and then I have a bass switch, and then I have a high-cut switch. And all that's to really tailor it towards the amp that you're using. So in one amp, like, you may have the bright switch on where it's brighter, and you're like, oh, that sounds great. And you plug into, an AC-15 or something, and you're like, holy cow, there's all kinds of treble in there, and it sounds terrible, mm-hmm. you know? And that's just... That's just the way it works.
Right.
I mean, there's not really a great way without putting 80 switches on it to make it work with every single amp, every single guitar, every single speaker, et cetera, et cetera.
You know? And that's why yours do have a lot more switches than normal. But, so that makes sense. I was wondering yes. about that. So the that nutshell is, version of that, the answer, I'm just kind of going to rethrow everything that you just said, I think, in a little smaller sure. package. Basically, he's wondering how that works with every amp. And the answer is because you design the pedal to be adjusted to sound like what it's supposed to, like an AC-30 or whatever, with as many amps as you can get your hands on, basically. That's how you account for that. Because he was like you said, DI makes sense. Like, you just plug it in, you plug it into the computer, and there you go. You got...
Well, it would, except, like, these pedals really are not made for DI. I keep wanting to say DIY.
Right.
They're really not, because there's no cabinet emulation there. There's cabinet emulation is in the sense that, like, when I'm designing it, I'm plugging through amps. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I'm taking into account whatever that amp is doing as well. Where if I'm plugging direct into my mixer, like, you don't have any sort of speaker emulation at all.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be really spiky and thin and brittle, and I don't recommend it in that situation. Something like that, grab yourself a Two Notes or some sort of impulse response-based unit. That's my personal preference.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's some other companies that make analog-based units that do speaker emulation. I'm generally not a huge fan of those, except in a pinch. But yeah, that's my thing. It's those, and I do see a lot of people that are using those direct in, and some people do like the sound, but that's not how I really set out to. That's not what I was trying to achieve with that.
Right, right. But I mean, basically, what I was getting at is the whole concept is you plug into a whole bunch of different amps while designing and try to account for as many variables as you can. That's the kind of how it works, basically, when trying to achieve that sound.
Right. Yep. So let me ask you, Blake, as a player yourself, do you really, this is just my personal question, it's not on here from Stevie Y at all, you know? So, do you as a player, because you play in a band, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when you're playing through, what do you play through? It's not a Morgan. What is it? It's a...
I'm normally playing through my Benson Monarch. Yes, that's what I normally play.
Yeah, okay, your Benson. So do you ever say, you know what? I need an AC-30 sound for this song.
Not really. I don't usually think about things that way myself. I kind of get my amp dialed into where I like it, and then I just use whatever pedals I think the song needs, essentially. I don't really think about it in terms of I need a Marshall-type sound or I need a Vox-type sound or anything like that. I just think of it as, in terms of the sound itself, I'm like, I need more gain here, or I need less gain here, or I need a big muff. Well, it's like I've talked about before with you. I don't really own very many overdrives that are labeled as quote-unquote amp-in-a-box type sounds. Just because I've never really approached things that way. I'd like to have all those amps in my collection someday to have those voices, but I don't really think about it, the amp-in-a-box type thing. Most of my overdrives and dirt pedals are just labeled as whatever kind of overdrive and dirt they are. So the short answer is no, I don't really think about that.
So for you as a player, you're looking more for, I don't want to say generic, but kind of a generic, just not really generic. That's not the right word. For something that's not going to be so specifically voiced like a Plexi, but you're looking for a good distortion that's just going to work well with your amp.
Exactly. And then I have a lot of them. So you know what? Some of them may be technically like Marshalls in a box. Like if you go on that classic, that classic circuit, the Brown Sound in a box or whatever. Some of them may be based on that, but they're not really marketed that way. So I don't think about them in that term. I just think,
so you're not,
this distortion sounds good with my amp, but it sounds different than this other distortion that I have. That's right, kind of.
So you're not going, what I need here is Eddie Van Halen. I need the Eddie Van Halen sound.
Not generally, not most of the time. No, I don't really think about. It's hard to describe. I don't think about other people's sounds as much as you would think, except maybe like David Gilmour, just because it's David Gilmour.
Right.
But I don't think about needing a specific amp for a specific song necessarily, which I know you used to do when you were gigging. You would carry like 400 amps. I've also been, back when you were gigging more, there wasn't like Wampler pedals where you could get all these different sounds. I'm just kind of looking over my shoulder at my pedals right now. And yeah, I don't have anything that's at least labeled to be something like that.
Right.
If that makes any sense.
It
Except
does.
Except for maybe a couple love pedal things that I have. And I honestly only bought them just because I liked how they sounded. I like the love pedal Leslius, and it's supposed to be a tweed sounding thing. And I didn't really even think about it at the time. I just plugged into it and thought, that sounds really good. That's how I approach it most of the time.
Interesting. Yeah, I don't think I do. I don't think I do nearly as much as I did whenever I was playing in a cover band.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and even like every now and then I'll sit in with a cover band. But you know, now that I think about it, even now I really don't take that many different things anymore. Actually, I take that back. I do take a lot of different things, but they're not all on the same board for me to use at different parts of the song. But right. I am the annoying guy that, like, if there's too much of a break between songs, like the drummer's like, what do you want to play? And the singer's like, I don't know, man. Do you know how to play this? And the other guitar player's like, I don't know the chords of that. You know, and so, you know, that kind of conversation goes.
Oh, yeah.
If they're doing that sort of thing, then I'm like, this is the perfect time to change pedals. And I'm like, I just happen to have five laying next to my pedal board. I think I'll put my amp on standby and see what it sounds like for these other pedals.
I can relate to that for sure. I don't play in a specific. I mean, I play covers, but I don't play in a cover band that's out like gigging or anything. So
we do mostly Cyndi Lauper covers.
So, yeah, I assumed.
Pretty much.
I assumed, and you gotta have the right Plexi sound for those Cyndi Lauper covers. You just have to
Plexi and heavy fuzz.
Yes,
know, all day
definitely.
Long.
Yeah, I hear the Leviathan would be a good choice for basically all your Lauper needs.
I was trying to get her on as a signature artist for the Leviathan, but things didn't work out right.
Huh.
You know? So
now I forgot who it was. Somebody sent me a snap the other day with the Leviathan in it saying, oh yeah, this thing's brutal. And I can't remember who it was, but if you're listening,
I'm noticing that more and more, and I'm getting more and more requests for that. I've thought about bringing the Beast back.
Well,
you know,
I'm looking at one in the cabinet right now that you definitely did not send me I totally bought that with my own money, and you didn't send it to me a long time ago. I love that pedal for my seven-string riffage.
So it's like the Leviathan is a totally different fuzz than, like, it's not a clone of anything, you know. And that was really speaking as a company, that was the hardest thing for us, because the most common question we'd get is it a Big Muff? No. Is it a Fuzz Phase? No. Is it a Tone Bender? No. Would you have anything that's like one of those?
Right.
And I'm like, there's like 45,000 builders that are doing that. You probably just want to go buy one of theirs.
Right. Well, I think back when you released that was probably more common. Like, people wanted, they just wanted what they wanted. I think as the market's progressed and things have changed, that people want to try different stuff now. And so re-releasing the Leviathan might not be a bad idea.
So what you're saying is I was ahead of my time. That's really what you're saying, right?
I'm serious, though. I think you may have been a little bit ahead of the market in that regard. Like, people weren't quite ready for something that wasn't what they were used to. But now we got things like, you know, Chase Bliss stuff, and and people are looking for more experimental type sounds, you know, Dwarfcraft and guys like that mm-hmm. are just making all these crazy sounds. I think that people would be much more receptive to something that wasn't a Fuzz Phase or a Big Muff.
Probably so. And that's an odd conversation, because I had a conversation today with a guy, and he was telling me that we need to make a Fuzz Phase. He's like, everybody loves a good Fuzz Phase. You need to make a Fuzz Phase. I'm like, I don't know, man. There's so many of them out there, you know? I don't know if I want to do another Fuzz Phase.
That's the thing, is you could, honestly, you've been around long enough and people know what you do. If you were just like, I need money and I don't care, I'm just going to come out with stuff, like some companies do, not to be named, then you could probably come out with a two-knob Fuzz Phase and people would go, and people would buy it. Some people would purchase it. It might not be a big seller, but you'd make some money on it, most likely.
I mean, if I do, okay, so, and I told the guy this today as well. I said, if I do a Fuzz Phase, it's going to be Wamplerized. So there's going to be like 8 switches,
mm-hmm.
like 5 band EQ.
Well, it's just like the Clarksdale.
Tap tempo. It's going to have tap tempo on it.
Tap tempo Fuzz Phase.
With subdivisions.
I got to get that dotted eighth fuzz note. I got to get it.
Exactly.
But no, I was thinking about when you were talking about Fuzz Phase. Well, that's kind of what you did with the Clarksdale. It was like, I don't really want to come out with a tube screamer, but everyone's screaming about it.
Right.
Well, I didn't mean to say it like that, but oh well. Everyone's asking me for one. So I guess if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it my way. And I think if you did come out with a Fuzz Phase or something, that would be the approach also.
Yeah, and I think that's just kind of my personality, where I don't know. I like to Wamplerize things,
mm-hmm.
you know, which is why I can't drop that bomb chill. I started to drop one of the next releases that's coming out. Oh, that was close. Almost just slipped off the tongue.
Oh, no, you can't talk about that yet.
Oh, not yet.
You can't talk that one, Brian. You silly.
It's not ready yet.
No.
It's not ready, but something cool coming soon.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Very soon.
I mean, I don't know what you're talking about. What do you... I'm just kidding. Nothing I know of. Well, I don't know about anything. Anyway, I think coming out with the Pelotar.
Yeah, clone of the Pelotar.
Well, that's never been done. No, as far as I know, no one's cloned a Pelotar. So, man.
No, I tease. All right, so that's all the questions I have for today.
Wow, we just went all over the place again, didn't we?
We did do bad. If I had to pat myself on the back, I could a little bit.
You could give yourself a light.
I did all right.
A light little tap?
Just a little tap, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Can I have a pat on the head? Like, good job. Good job,
boy. Of course.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty much all I have to add on that topic.
All right, very good. Well, until next week, as always, I appreciate your input, and we'll do this again soon. Cool?
Sounds good. Keep it fuzzy.
Thanks again for listening to the Chasing Tone podcast. I really appreciate it. If you have any questions or comments, you can always email comment, or you can always email podcast at wamperpedals.com. You can always email Blake at info@tonemob.com. You can check us out on Facebook. We have a special group there for people who love effects called Wampler Pedals Tone Group. Blake has one as well called the Tone Mob. And if you would like to leave a comment on YouTube, it really helps us. I really appreciate it if you could leave a comment on YouTube, on iTunes. And I might have said iTunes a minute ago, but I meant iTunes. And just leave a comment there. Tell everyone how much you love the show, how much you appreciate what we do, if you like it. Hope you do. So with that said, thanks again, and we'll talk to you next week.